I'm sure that your neighbors are lovely, but Ben and I really have the best neighbors. When we bought our house more than 2 years ago, we were looking at price more than anything else. Okay, price and a wood-burning fireplace. And when I say we were looking for, I mean we looked at one house, discovered it was in our price range, rushed back to our realtor's office, made an offer, had our offer as the offer accepted, 1 out of 7. 3 hours later, the transaction was done. Needless to say, we did not give a whole lot of thought to who our neighbors might be. Well, Ben is the friend magnet in our relationship, so it wasn't too long until we knew all of our neighbors by name. Our neighbors to the west are probably most like us. They're a couple without kids, but with lots of dogs. Our neighbors to the east are all related. There's a daughter, and then in the third house, the parents of the two daughters. The dad in this scenario owns a snowblower, and we've discovered that if we keep him plied with Starbucks gift cards, when he's out snowblowing, he'll go just one driveway past his own offspring. It's worked out pretty well so far. But the neighbor that we are hands down most grateful for is our neighbor to the north, the neighbor who lives across the street. Her name is Kathy. Now, our relationship with Kathy started when she needed a shed assembled, a shed for her backyard, and she had had her eye on Ben, who does all sorts of projects in our garage, and so she knew that he was handy. And so she came over and asked if he would come help with this project. Well, as soon as the shed was standing, so was the offer. Anytime we needed a cat sitter, remember back when we just had cats? When we needed a cat sitter, we could just give her a call and she would come over. For 2 years, we've traded favors back and forth like this. A broken exercise repaired, she takes our trash and recycling down to the curb. A car part fixed, she takes the trash and recycling back to the house. We are terrible at the trash and recycling. We would print off a school paper that they needed. Kathy would make sure that she could let the dogs out when it was a long day for me at work. So in my mind, the tally was pretty even. It wasn't until a few weeks ago when one of our neighbor's neighbors was arrested in his front lawn that I realized what kind of neighbor Kathy really is. The neighbor's kids ran from the house when the police showed up, and they went straight to Kathy's front door, where she had the door open and ushered them in. And sadly, it looked like it wasn't the first time they'd been through this routine. Kathy isn't about keeping score or trading favors. She didn't have the mental tally going on in her head. She was offering, she does offer, to each of her neighbors what they need without any expectation in return. As Paul was writing to the church in Rome in the first century, he knew the language they spoke, that language of obligation. Roman citizens owed the emperor their allegiance and honor. They owed their benefactors in the patron-client system, they owed them all sorts of things, money, possessions, honor. Slaves owed service and really their whole lives to their masters. Wives owed submission to their husbands. That one's a little hard to say, but in first century Rome, you get the idea. So when Paul writes, "Owe no one anything except love to one another," he's doing more than penning a feel-good exhortation. He's taking the way Roman society was structured and he's turning it upside down. He is rearranging the way we as Christians are to live our lives. If obligation was related to one's position in society relative to another person, if obligation is connected to upholding status, authority, all of those relational dynamics that are at play, then Paul's exhortation to owe nothing except love, at the very least, forces some rethinking. You'll notice that Paul doesn't write, in addition to your normal culture and ethic that is based on the system of obligation, love one another. It's not in addition to. Paul says, owe nothing. Owe nothing except love. And whatever the Romans thought they understood about how proper society was structured now becomes irrelevant in light of a much, much greater obligation to love one another, to love your neighbor as yourself. Paul Waldner, a teacher, went to his father. His father's the president of the leader of the Green Acres Hutterite colony. Paul came to his father to ask if their colony should sponsor a Syrian refugee family. Paul's dad, in his position of authority, didn't hesitate. The Hutterites are a minority group in Canada, a minority religious group. They're loosely related to the Amish and the Mennonites. And what Paul's dad knew was their own history, that they had been refugees themselves, that they had thrived because of the generosity of others. In Paul's father's words, he said, "Our ancestors were refugees long ago. People were always there to help them." So it didn't require a lot of thought for Paul and his family. Well, shortly thereafter, a Muslim family of four, the Al-Hamouds, arrived in Manitoba. Now, before the war, Najwa, she's the mother, she was in elementary school in Syria. Her husband, the father in the family, Rayad, he worked in construction. About 10 days after they fled to Lebanon, their home that Rayad had spent years of his life building was destroyed in a bomb strike. And so they're bringing all of this trauma with them as they come to Canada, and they're anxious. I mean, can you imagine the anxiety? How are they going to be welcomed? How long was that snow going to be on the ground? Right, so some of their anxiety faded as they came down the escalator at the airport and they saw their Canadian hosts, the family, the community that was going to sponsor them. Najwa was relieved because she was in her traditional dress. And she saw that the Hutterites were too, that the women were wearing long flowing dresses. And she realized that both of their faith traditions use clothing as a way to maintain their heritage and their origins. She loved that the Hutterites still spoke German as their first language, because to her, that signaled that minorities in a large country could still retain a part of their identity and heritage. Now, Paul and his wife Wanda were super excited to welcome this family to their community, but not everyone in their colony was immediately receptive. Even their own daughter, Paul and Wanda's daughter, Kayla, was pretty unsure. She couldn't imagine why her dad needed to disrupt her daily life with something like hosting a family. Fair enough. Well, after several months, the coldness of the winter gave way to the warmth of summer, and the Al-Hamouds were invited to bonfires, to go on bike rides. Najwa would often cook with the other women in the family. They would cook vegetables together. Another refugee family came alongside the Hutterite community and the Al-Hamouds. They taught Rayad and Najwa English. And together over bottomless cups of Turkish coffee, the parents would sit together and watch their kids play on the lawn. In Kayla's graduation speech that she was asked to give, this was a couple months after the Al-Hamoud family had come and kind of disrupted her family's life, it was clear in her speech that her apprehension had given way to admiration. "I never, ever in a million years would have figured they would snuggle their way into my heart as easily as they did," she said in her speech. Now, the real moment of solidification in the relationship between these families came when Najwa delivered her third child. As soon as they got the text message that the baby was on its way, the Al-Hamoud's Hutterite family rushed to the hospital. They swarmed the room. Najwa said afterwards, "They did things for me that even my own siblings wouldn't do for me. Their actions really, really surprised me." That's how love, the kind of love that comes with no strings attached, with no tally kept, that kind of love can be surprising. It comes more naturally to keep score, doesn't it? To build a fence when a table will do, to give into apprehension when admiration is what's called for, to hold on to a debt instead of making way for a dream. And then there's this way that Paul writes about, this Jesus way, a more excellent way. Owe no one anything except to love one another. For the one who loves another has fulfilled the law. Love does no wrong to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law.